This is the beginning of Class 8.
Sanshi Bhagi Shushin Yetok Shang Vira Vinshi Nyende Kempati Sangye Shindu Mithe Kuwagi Jogu Nanda Shingla Shibashu Sangye Chodan Sangye Chodanma Chanchu Padu Dhani Khyapsu Chi Dhaki Chunyen Bipe Sunanki Dhola Penche Sangye Chupasho Sangye Chodan Sangye Chodanma Chanchu Vajru Dhammi Khyapsu Chi Dhaki Chunyen Dhipe Sunam Ki Yola Penche Sangye Jupa Shu Sangye Chodam Sangye Chodama Chanchu Vajru Dhammi Suchi Dahi Chunyen Gimpe Sunam Ki Yola Penche Sangye Jubhashu.
Last time you had Kedubje's interpretation, and this is now Dharmakirti's actual quote. It's a very long chapter, and it starts with this verse. So I thought at least you should hear the first verse of the argument. It goes on for many pages, and the class is too short for you to hear all the arguments. There's a big fight. I mean, he presents his arguments. All you're going to hear is his opening arguments, and they come back and they fight against him, and then he give some better arguments, and then they give more arguments, and it's exactly the kind of arguments you'd expect an American to get. So it's very interesting. It's called the Charvaka. In Tibetan it's called Gyanpemba. They don't exist anymore as far as I know. And it was a group of Hindus, 1300 years ago. Yeah. You know, I was telling the other class, it's actually, you don't see a lot of arguments in Buddhist literature to prove reincarnation because everyone believes it, which is actually not good. I mean, you should try to prove it. This is about the only proof you ever see. I mean, all the proofs I've ever seen came from this. So, and I don't know many people who ever studied these as a separate subject. In the monastery, you might get up to this just before your geshe. And some people never get up to this. So, anyway. Kewa Yongsa Nembana means when you take birth, when a person takes birth. Okay? And I'm not going to go through it word by word. It's just a blessing for you to hear. When a person takes birth. Okay? And I'm not going to go through it word by word. It's just a blessing for you to hear the actual verse. And then we'll go ahead and discuss it. Kewa Yongsa Nembana. Jungu Wamu Lodangi. Jungu means the passing of the breath out and then in. They always start with the out breath and then they do the in breath. That has a big significance. So it means when the infant is breathing out and then in. When it comes out of the womb. Him or her. Wambu means sense powers. Five sense powers. Which are eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body. And basically, this refers to life, the living tissue. And where does that life, why is that tissue alive? And lo means mind, okay? Mind. And in this case, it refers to the anxiety displayed by a newborn child. He's already feeling fear or discomfort, or, you know, he's already displaying some kind of emotions, as though he had been used to having those emotions. So Dharmakirti is taking three characteristics of a newborn child. And you have to remember the three because they're going to keep coming up again and again. One is the fact that the child is breathing. One is the fact that the child has his or her sense powers already functioning, living tissue. And then one is the fact that of his mind, the mind itself, and specifically the quality of the mind, that the mind is already showing anxiety. Gandhi Rikla Tumen Chen, the third line, in conjunction with the last word of the fourth line, mean these three things are not something which do not depend, the double negative, okay? These three things are not something which does not depend on something of a similar type. I'll say it again. These three things are not something which do not depend on something of a similar type. Yeah. Don't forget, though, he's arguing against somebody. He's responding to somebody saying, oh, they come from your mom and dad's mind, your mom and dad's physical elements. Yuni Bhajit Nekemian means they do not come only from the body itself. They do not come only from the body itself. Okay. Now, Dharmakirti gives in this verse and in the next few verses, he gives basically 10 arguments for the existence of other lives. This is the opening argument, and we're going to reduce all of them to normal argument form, which is that you take something, say something about it, and then you try to prove it. So here, we'll do the first argument, then you'll know what I mean. I kind of punched you. I didn't sleep long. Maria Placid's mother passed away. Morning very early. So we had to move in. They asked that you not call her, but that if you'd like, there'll be a funeral Saturday morning if you'd like. You guys can go. It's in Manhattan. You wanted to do that. Also, I'm supposed to announce Nancy Karen is a Tai Chi instructor. She teaches Tai Chi in hospital. This is the wrong word. This is where to send the flowers. Okay. Anyway, if you're interested in a Tai Chi class, there's going to be one here, like just for exercise purposes, either on Saturdays or Fridays, and they're trying to decide on the days. I think it's on the bulletin board out. So the argument goes like this. The breathing, the well-developed sense power, and his mind. Anxiety meaning his mind. The first two basically you can lump into life. See what I mean? His breathing and the living tissue in his body, the life in him. Okay? The difference between him and a rock. Okay? Some kind of life is there. Okay? Where did that come from? You know, you can go back to the first moment that he had what you call life. Where did that life come from? The life displayed in the breathing and the life displayed in the living tissue of his body. Where did that come from? Okay. And then thirdly, where did the mind come from? So we know there was a first moment of those things. Where did the first moment of those things come from? And Dharmakirti says, by the way, we're taking what we can observe, which is after the baby comes out. But of course, the first moment of his life and of his mind occurs inside the womb. So, where did they come from? Dharmakirti says they did not come from something which was not of their own type. Life has to come from life. Mind has to come from mind. Because you can see them now. repeatedly has them now. You can observe that he has life. You can observe that he has a mind. They could not have come from something which was not similar. They must rely on something similar. And there are lots of ideas about where it could have come from. We talked about it last time. You know, I think the modern Western ones, the ones that have come up in your mind, if I say, where did your life, you know, where did the first moment of your life come from? What did that rely upon to occur? And then suddenly that thing turned into the first moment of life in you. And where did the first moment of mind in you come from? You know, what things got together, disappeared, and this result came out? Mind. Okay. That's the nature of a Nyerlingigyu, right? Nyerlingigyu disappears. The acorn, as the oak tree sprouts, the acorn must disappear. So what was it that all came together, and then poof, there's a mind, or poof, there's life, and the cause disappears? You know, what was that? And you have to say, I think in Western world you say, I mean, as far as I can, you know, I'm just a layman in science, right? But I guess, you know, the chemicals came together. The chemicals in the sperm and the egg came together, and that was enough with certain other conditions present that cells started to divide, and then there was enough cells to have a nerve, and then there was enough nerve for an impulse to go along, and that was the first moment of life. Something like that. And Dharmakirti is saying, that's not correct. Those could be factors. They could be conditions for mind or life to start. They could provide the general conditions, but they are not the Nyerlingigyu. They're not the thing which flops over. They're not the stuff which became your life or your mind. That has to be something similar.
You're making a distinction between the living.
Life and mind.
Physical living thing.
Yeah. Because that's to me what he's trying to say. Jumu is the reflection of life. Now, the definition of life in Buddhism is another subject. It's in the Abhidhamma Kosha. There's a big debate about it. Chodam Namche Te Naimbo. That's the line from the Abhidhamma Kosha. So, we'll study that someday. No time today. I get out lots of stuff today. Wangbo means the living tissue in your body. As opposed to, say, the tips of your fingernails and the tips of your hair, which are insensitive. The rest of your body is what we call wangu soup. And then lo, the mind of the child. So where did those three things come from? It's tempting. This in Sanskrit dak is normally a dual. It normally refers to two things. He's named three things. I tend to think he's grouping the first two together as life. And then the third one is mind and saying life. Where did your life and mind come from? And that's his first argument. That's the opening salvo by Dharmakirti to the Chanaka. Come on, do you really think a rock could turn into a mine? What, the rock would disappear? It has to be something similar. You don't have to buy it. You won't buy it. You've been brainwashed into our kid to believe that's how it happens. It'll cook. It has to cook. And it will cook, and then one day you'll start to tend to it. It is correct. You can corroborate it in deep meditation. You can see your future lives and your past lives. That's not a proof. I'm just saying, experientially, this is what will happen to you. Eventually, you'll see it. It happens to be true. The arguments are not funny or... They sound specious, but they're not. And he gets into later... He admits they sound specious, and he says, this is why they're not. They're not. That's proof number one. Proof number two, the other four next time. Okay, so the second argument goes, take those three, which are what?
Breathing,
living tissue, and that mind. Do we not come from the elements alone? Because they come from something earlier of a similar type. That's earlier of a similar type is very much... It's the whole key to all of his arguments. And if someone asks you ever on a homework or something, what's the crux of all of Dharmakirti's arguments? It's those two qualities. The Nyerlingigyu, the main cause, the material cause of something, should be something earlier than the result, obviously, because all causes are, and it should be something of a similar type. That's the crux of all these arguments.
And my problem with the argument, question number 6, about the mind-body surveillance one, is that how similar we talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to me there are probably lots of other ways of disproving that.
It is a mind, so in that case, in that sense, it's similar. It's the content.
And also, there was
similar.
Any kind of offspring just that becomes similarity.
There are similar traits. By the way, a Buddhist, I mean, the answer to that is that the child and the parents share some karma. I mean, they share a similar karma to be living in the same family, to be living in the same house, to be living in the same... They're going to spend, you know, years and years together. They share some kind of karma. And they that would be the explanation of why they share diabetes, for example, or whatever, you know, parents have to be epileptic and the child is epileptic also. That would be the explanation of that. I don't expect you to buy it. I just want you to know this.
I just find it very satisfying.
I know.
I mean, there's so many other things you can bring up, like the fact that can one mind come from two minds?
Not according to Buddhism, never.
Does that
ever
make any sense?
A new mind
he
never
even
stop.
Addresses
that. Yeah, he does. Okay. I want to talk about the elements, because I don't know if I mentioned it last time, but I know I had a lot of trouble with the idea of the elements. It sounded like, you know, holistic, natural, Chinese medicine stuff, which I didn't accept, and I didn't even know anything about it. I didn't accept Tibetan medicine either until I translated for Yoshin, and then it made a lot of sense. It made great sense, but I up until that point, I thought, sounds good, but, you know, not much use. And I thought the elements were silly, you know, wind, fire, you know, what is there, a little wind blowing in your, some atoms in your arm or something. And then when I studied the Abhidhamma Kosha, the first chapter, it explains what the elements are, and it makes very, very good sense. The elements are the energy underlying all physical matter. They are behind all physical matter. The physical matter that you see or touch or smell or hear, they all have behind them and stimulating them and supporting them are the four elements. So I'm just going to write the definitions of the four elements in Buddhism, and I think you can appreciate them a little bit more.
All physical matter?
All physical matter, living or dead, you know, animate or inanimate.
That's why I was wondering if you gave the four elements.
As an example of the inanimate. But they are, by the way, they're also the basis for all physical matter. What's the first one, you know? Satcha Mendel, what's the
first
one?
Earth.
Earth, okay. Earth is Sat. It's Sashi Tepa. This is the definition of Earth. You know, every young monk, by the time he's 15, is debating this in the monastery. Sa means concrete.
Sa.
This sa. It's not the same spelling as the word for earth. Okay?
Solid.
Yeah. Solid and. Shing means and. Tepa means rigid. It has the ability to stand up. Because there's a lot of the earth element, or the earth energy, and earth is just a symbol. And even in the Abhidhamma, it says, look, it's not that we think there's dirt laying in there or something like that. It's just a metaphor for that energy behind the wall, the hardness of the wall. It's not even the hardness of the wall. It's the energy creating the hardness of the wall. And it's behind the hardness of the wall. So because this wall has a lot of earth element in it, it's hard. It's relatively hard. It's harder than the carpet. The carpet has less earth element than the wall. According to the Abhidharma, all physical objects have all four elements in them, to some degree. Even each molecule has all four elements in it, to some degree. and whether the thing is hard or soft or wet or dry depends on how much of that element is in it. You can say what? Solid and rigid. Hard and supporting. They're actually defined by their functions. They are their functions. What is true? Water. Okay. Len means wet. Len.
And.
Wet. And Qing means and. All of them are different. Shenhua means flowing. Fluid. Flowing. Red and flowing.
Do they have colors associated with these?
Yeah, and that's ultimately why there's those four colors in the Dorje with the four colors. And they say, for example, that's why you hallucinate when you have hepatitis or something. When you have a bad cold, you see things bluish. They think they're not hot, but actually they have some heat, right?
Just burning
your
being in such a...
Burns your hand. No. Burns your hand. They're all a little... I don't think they're meant to be... I don't think the two pairs in each definition are meant to be exclusive.
No, but
right. Well, then maybe Sekva is destroying. I don't know. Could be consuming. Generally it means, you could say that.
Burning seems to be more dynamic than hot. Hot, it's hot, it's hot, it's hot.
Yang means light, not heavy. Xing means and. Yoa means, I don't know what you want to call it. It means, motility?
Mobile?
Moving. An earthquake is a sayo. You know, that's a yo. That's why yo means like that. To wave to somebody. So they all, I don't know what you would call that. Moving back and forth. Something like that. Whatever air does when it, like when the air conditioner is blowing. Blowing? Moving. So those are the elements. And Dharmakirti's second argument is that, of course, the elements have to be present there normally when the child is conceived. But that's not where the life and the mind, that's not what came together, disappeared, and suddenly mind came out. Not like that. They happen to be there. And you can see he's getting into the question of whether how much does the mind depend on the body. Starting to approach that question. And we'll get there. How does he define life?
Or does he define life?
It's very difficult. I mean, I was hoping nobody would ask. Yabhidharma defines it as that thing which underlies the warmth of the body and its consciousness. And there's huge debates about it, so I don't want to get into it. Cold-blooded reptiles and things like that.
That thing was underlined.
Warmth and consciousness. Warmth meaning warmth of the body. No, that's the thing which, when it disappears, the body gets cold. And there's a lot of debates about it. Huge debates about it. But I haven't seen any other definition in other literature. Those three things could not have come through any combination of the elements. And I think eventually one day they'll call the elements chemicals. Okay. I mean, he's talking about elements on the element chart. He's talking about chemicals. He's saying you can't take half a teaspoon of this, one teaspoon of that, four teaspoons of this, you know, mix them together, pour in water. They disappear and they flop over into a mind. No such thing. They may be present in the process of the mind entering, but they don't turn into mind or life, because they are not even similar at all. They have no similarity. The reason I gave you the definition of each of the elements, those definitions all hinge on some kind of tactile sense, creating some kind of tactile sense, creating some kind of visual thing, creating some kind of thing you could feel. And just not the mind is totally different. You cannot see the mind. You cannot feel the mind. You cannot break the mind, you can't push the mind, you can't squeeze the mind, you can't make it bigger. You can't even tell exactly where it is. It's the sense powers are perhaps, well, only the tactile one is limited to the boundary of your skin. You know, but the rest, I mean, your mind is in and outside of your body all over the place. You know, your body's an outline like that, and the mind is spread all over the place. It doesn't stay inside that little outline all the time. You know, it goes to your house, it goes to Europe, my mind goes to Bombay, to the stupid factory. your mind is all over. It's not restricted at all. Your visual consciousness is restricted to this general area. Don't confuse that with your mind. And don't think it's like just poetic to say that the mind is in Bombay. It's not at all. The mind is as much in Bombay as it is here. My mind. Your visual sense is so overwhelmingly predominant that you tend to mistake it for your mind. It's not like that. Your mind is truly international. Your mind can truly go anywhere. So stuff is totally different.
Isn't it taking two instances or any other that you might like to cite, where I'm sitting listening to you, but in fact I'm daydreaming about being there on that. So I'm really sort of, my eyes are watching you, and it's not as though I'm conscious. That's one instance. Another, where people have what are called out-of-body experiences or experiences. So in either or any other instance, can the mind, is it divisible?
Can it ever become two mental continua? No.
That's a stronger question than
it is. It never can. And there's this case where Dongo Rinpoche is this baby, not baby, now he's a boy, in my monastery. There's a big fight because he's the one Dongo line, and there's another Dongo line in Kham. And we have both monks are in our monastery. So they both believe that they have the real Tongkorn. And Tongkorn Rinpoche died in the 1700s in a town in China after getting an award from the Emperor of China. And he did pour at the last minute into the body of a Chinese person. And then he was reborn anyway, so now there's two Tongkorn lines. So there's a big debate, you know, could have one mind become two? No. One of them has to be a tupu. I mean, or both of them. They have to be the emanation of the same mind.
How many generations will Tuku come?
No, Tuku is independent of actually generations. It's a movie put on by a mind that's somewhere else.
So the mind can carry it on for generation after generation.
As it wishes to. If Tuku is a physical emanation of a mind that's not, that has nothing to do with that.
So you're saying the Tuku wasn't really born from a mother, it was just...
No, not at all.
So it's a fake.
Yeah, it's just a fake. It's even called Sultumba. Sultumba means to put on a show.
But it doesn't.
A true Tuku is just a movie. put on by some being. They could be done all over the place. It could be tuples of the same mind all over. It's only one mind stream. He's just pretending.
I thought a tuple was a reincarnation of.
Well, a true tuple. I'm saying the real meaning of tuple is that. Dalai Lama could be, Avalokiteshvara could be showing Dalai Lamas on a million planets right now. This Dalai Lama is just one of them. But it's not more than one mind. It's one central mind showing these emanations. So it's not that you can create a mind or destroy a mind. It's impossible. There's a certain fixed number of minds and there'll never be more than that. None of them will ever end or none of them had a beginning. We'll get to that. Okay.
Can sense powers, any of them, or all of them, exist separate from the mind?
No.
But they're not mind.
The sense powers, I don't know if you talked about that. Can you plug me in there? They are the, they are the living cells which sense things like the optic nerve, the patches of cells at the behind the back of the eyeball are the sense power of the eye. So that localized life sensitivity at the back of the eyeball, according to all Buddhist theory, is the power of the eye. It is not mind. It stimulates mind. It transmits to the mind. It helps the mind grow. It helps the consciousness.
But the function, it doesn't depend on mind.
We're going to get to that. We'll get there. That's a good question. Number three, we got to move on. He wants to show off some absurdities to saying that the elements cause the mind, that they are the main cause of the mind, that they turn into the mind. And he says, well, then they would have to be, each element would have to be a little creature, you know, and they would give life. They would give birth to this life. That's just silly. That would also indicate that they're not similar.
There's a sort of cliche that whole is greater than the sum of the parts. I mean, if you want to make soup, you take your vegetables and you take your water and your spices, and it's not like the soup. The vegetable is not the same substance as the soup, but the soup is not a living creature, yet we put all the vegetables and water together and create soup. Why is it like
the soup? Someone gave a similar example last week. I think it was in your class. They said, well, hydrogen and... No, it was on the Friday night. Hydrogen and oxygen are in no way similar to water. But they are the nearly cute. They flop over into water. And I thought about it. I didn't have a good answer. But as I think about it, I think his main point is similar stuff. Hydrogen and oxygen are physical stuff. They turn into physical stuff. I think he's trying to say similar in the sense of material or substance. You know, vegetables and water and spices are similar substance to soup. But mind is just not at all similar to physical matter. And you just have to get... A lot of this argument will become easier as you get better at recognizing how different mind is from matter. Because right now, having grown up since you were a kid and reading in every newspaper you ever pick up, all these slight references to mind as residing in the brain somehow. You just inundated, you're soaked in this viewpoint, and it'll be very hard for you to step outside of it and see mind as something totally different from matter. It's difficult.
It resides with the body in some way.
They're obviously related. They're obviously related. That's why he says, Vashik means alone. They obviously provide some kind of a condition to support the mind. We're going to see.
When the mind is without the body, you just can't see it.
According to Buddhism, it does. There's a form of throne where beings don't have the fifth. They don't have the first of the five heaps. They don't have physical matter. But we'll get to that.
Wait. Before you're reborn, the mind has to exist somewhere.
The Bardo has a physical matter. Huh. It's a very subtle physical matter. It's a big debate. A lot of things. That was my debate last night. One of them. Take the mind. But my Lama taught me long ago, you know, you don't know. Someday you'll read a commentary why those double negatives are there and why they must be there. Never fool around with Buddhist scripture. And I encourage you the same. I mean, the theory of this course is that after another 3 years, you can go out and teach this stuff to people. Do not change things. Do not. If you don't understand why it's there, don't fix it. You know, Buddhism, if it's changed 1% in each generation, then in 500 years it becomes some new age, you know, latest idea crap.
Nobody's got offered any ideas as to why.
Well, I can tell you I'm quite sure why. It would be because he's... Why is he talking about future and past lives? Did he want to write a book about past and future lives? What's the book about? What did he write his book about? What's the book about? What's Dharma Kiri's book about? Pramana Vartika, Sema, Pramana. What is it? What is a correct perception? What is a valid perception? How do you know something's true?
To eliminate all the things that aren't true.
Well, then, no, not that. That sounds good, but no, but then that led into what? A Tenekibu, a person who is only Pramana. Then they would start talking about, well, what if a person was only prominent? What if you and I, people like you and I, only said what we were sure of? I noticed Michael Moon, but I have my boss at work. I mean, one thing I admire about, he's the in-between boss. I notice nowadays, having studied this subject, he doesn't say something he's not sure about. He say, well, let me check it out, or let me go find out, or let me make sure myself, let me see it myself. Doesn't speculate. You know, doesn't say something that he doesn't know to be true. And that's very good. That's the idea, actually. That's what we're supposed to reach. So they started discussing a person who is only Sema, an omniscient being, who only lived off what he really knew, and only spoke about what he really knew. How did that lead into this? Remember the last reasoning boils down to the first reasoning. I know it's been a long course. Remember that? Archaeologist. He's totally correct because he's... I had to grade 50 of these papers, so I can remember. He's totally correct because he's a... protector because he... went to bliss. He's went to bliss because he's a teacher. He's a teacher because he has compassion. So it's really the correctness boiled down to compassion. It was compassion that eventually created his total omniscience, his total correctness. Now, how did that lead into... Am I getting close yet? How did that lead into this whole...
Because he couldn't... It would take a couple of lives to get there.
It would take a lot of lives to develop that kind of compassion.
So they would say there was no Buddha.
And they said, well, then it's impossible. We say the guy who created the world has to be omniscient from the beginning. Because if omniscience is something that you have to develop, if becoming God, if learning to have the knowledge of God takes so many lives, it's impossible. There's no such thing as past lives and future lives. Mainly because we can't remember past lives, and also when the person stops flopping around on the hospital bed, the mind stops. Anyone can see it. Looks like that. So that's why we're arguing past and future lives. We're trying to establish that someone can develop compassion over many lives, perfect his compassion, and then eventually become omniscient.
Yeah. You know, bigger than Hinayana, despite believing in reincarnation,
well, yeah, if you go to Sri Lanka, it was kind of depressing kind of Buddhism, because they're all saying, like, yeah, Jains believe, I work with a lot of Jains in the diamond business. They truly believe that you cannot perfect yourself. They believe that you have to go on for billions and billions of lives, and you might as well forget it. You know, it's impossible.
You started out with double negative.
Yeah, so I think he's.
Thank you.
I think he's arguing against somebody. Somebody said the mind does not cross into a future life. Now am I relevant? Right? There is no future life. Somebody said there is no future life. He says, sure, there's a future life. It's not that there's no future life. Okay? Because you can observe the ability of the mind to continue itself. The mind does.
It's a rhetorical device, in other words, the double negative.
Yeah, or no, he's fighting against somebody. And if you read the reading, it's actually presented as an argument against something that came before. So you can see that your mind presently has some kind of ability to continue itself. Yeah, it's not totally foolproof. And you could say, just because at present the mind has this inherent ability to go on to the next moment of mind, doesn't mean that the mind at the last moment of my life is also going to have that ability. In fact, we believe it does not have that ability. But this is, I'm just giving you his argument. I'm not trying to fix it. You know, I think altogether all his 10 arguments are pretty... He's just pointing out evidence. Okay? He would say to you, what evidence do you have that the last moment of mind should be any different from all the other moments of mind? You prove to me that suddenly, after 70 years of having that ability to create the next moment of mind, at the last moment in your life, suddenly it loses this ability that it had all that time?
Oh, no, I agree with
you. Yeah. Well, that's what he says. It's not bad, actually.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you're saying that something that didn't happen in every moment of your life for that many years suddenly doesn't happen in the last moment? Does the nature of your mind change suddenly? You know, does one of its most basic characteristics suddenly get lost? I know, very well. Okay, we got two more to go.
Hey, we observe it's the dinner.
The other thing is, you know, we talk about mind and it's harking back to the last question, that question number 6, mind coming from another person's mind. What are we really talking about when we're talking about mind? Because it seems to me there are a lot of different qualities that individuals may manifest during a given lifetime that are not part of the mind that goes from lifetime to lifetime, but appear to be mental qualities, or at least take place in that realm. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you mean. Like the difference between core mind and then details of the mind that get lost and don't get lost when we take them.
His example again is why I said from example, skilled craftsman or foolish. I mean, foolishness seems to me is not a quality of the mind that goes from lifetime to lifetime, lifetime to lifetime.
He's not saying that, though.
But he's implying
that. No, what he said was... I see what you mean.
Yeah?
He's implying that the child is what he's saying.
He's making an absurdity, but he's making a nonsense.
Fail to do so? How's that? Sometime 20 years from now, if all this is still going through, you have to. Buddhism says there's four ways of thinking. And then, birth from warmth and moisture, which the Middle Ages they called spontaneous generation. Like, they didn't believe mosquitoes came from warmth and moisture, and they didn't realize they were living there, and actually they came from it. So they said, well then, they should be like tushire kewa, means warmth and moisture. Anytime you have warmth and moisture there, basically think of it this way, anytime you have all those chemicals in one place, then poof, the elements should disappear. No, don't forget, it's not silly. That's the acorn. We're talking yirangigyu. We're talking substantial cause, material cause. We're not talking the conditions that are there. The acorn must disappear, period. When the oak tree comes out, the acorn can't be there anymore. So, okay, anytime you have those elements in one place and they happen to bang into each other, poof, they should disappear and there should be a mind there. So, but that's not the case. Sometimes you do see elements come together and create a condition for life to occur. But you don't always see it. So why? What's happening? What's really causing life to occur there? You get all the physical conditions together sometimes and life does not occur. Mind does not occur. Therefore, those physical elements are not the main cause for life.
But the physical conditions that we think of to have life occur,
yeah,
they do make life occur. And mind
comes to the elements.
The chemicals? So I can get those chemicals together and create a mind? Can I create a mind? Can I place certain chemicals together and they disappear in the mind and mind occurs there?
No.
That's what the yearling must be.
The sperm and the egg and
that's what we believe. That's what we believe. But he's saying, okay, I admit they're always there when the thing happens in a womb birth. But why can't I take those same chemicals, put them on the ground, you know, and wait, and put all the conditions there, and then suddenly a mind occurs. Those elements disappear, and the mind occurs.
Well, I think to some extent some scientists are
trying in that direction.
Yeah.
They're trying. They're trying. You really are trying.
Yeah.
And what do you say? I don't say it's not possible. For karmically, it's possible for it to occur something. I mean, it's possible to it's possible that you could have all that. Well, I don't even know. No, I don't think so.
No, but it may be a mind wants to get into it. Maybe a mind.
Yeah, I don't think. What I mean is not one of the four kinds of prayer. I don't think scripturally it would ever happen.
The time is said that it can happen in an artificial intelligence situation, like a computer. Somebody asked him, could something take birth in a computer? He said it's possible.
I mean, which one of the four kinds of prayer would it be? I don't
know.
In that case, yeah, if you call me, I can say. I actually accept it. If you can grow from a lotus flower, you can grow. We all the hell beings, supposedly, for example, they just occur there. You don't have parents. And in the deity realms too, they just appear. So that's
Michael, can you just rephrase enough to see? Just say it another way. I'm kind of
trying to I'll say it another way. Then anytime you have those same chemicals in the same place, then a mind should occur. But that's not what happens.
In there,
anytime you have those chemicals together somewhere,
okay,
a mind should poof. You know, a new mind should start. The idea is so silly that you don't agree to me. You laugh, but that's exactly what you scientists are saying. Anytime I get those chemicals together, poof, you know, and then a mind starts.
But wait a minute. We're talking about material cause, but also for certain things to take place, for the result of material cause to take place, there do have to be certain conditions.
Yes. Yeah, there has to be water, sunlight, fertilizer, soil. Yeah. Agreed. He didn't say, he keeps saying
the potential
only.
It's
not the main cause. It's not what turns into it. They have to be there. The conditions have to be there. He never said that wasn't true. And the conditions may not be too similar to this. Not as similar.
Means only.
Okay, we have a last part. We're actually going to do pretty good. Can I get to eat all the cookies?
Yeah, then
he says, and why not? you tell me the difference. He says, you think I'm being silly. What's the difference between it's causing just one mind and causing 20 minds? You know, if you have 20 teaspoons of sulfur instead of one spoon of sulfur, well then, you tell me the difference. Why do you only get one mind? Why don't you get 10?
But sometimes we do hope
for that. But not 20, right? Not yet.
White people.
I changed it from being, okay, because I thought I'd have more force. Okay. That's one of the rules for interpretation. Right? Do you remember? It says cable, which means personality. Yeah, okay. I should get here.
This is the end of Class 8.